You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, my guest today. We're very pleased to have Eboo Patel. He's founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps. That's an organization based in Chicago. It trains students to bridge the faith divide through interfaith cooperation. Eboo Patel is on the Council on Foreign Relations. He's also with the Department of Homeland Security's Faith-Based Advisory Council. He holds a doctorate in sociology of religion from Oxford University. He studied as a Rhodes Scholar there. Grew up in, I believe, the Chicago area. Went to University of Illinois and then, of course, on to Oxford. He is coming to Utah for several events, including the main event, which is a convocations address at Utah State University in the Kent Concert Hall on Thursday, September 4th. It'll start at 7 p.m. It's free and open to the public. It's entitled Building Bridges of Interfaith Cooperation. And there will be a book signing of his latest book, Sacred Ground. That's immediately after the convocation. Books are available at the USU bookstore, also for sale that night at the venue, the convocation. And this convocation is a kicking off event for the Better Together campaign at USU. It's being organized by the new USU Interfaith Initiative. And if you'd like to get involved with them, you can email them at interfaith@usu.edu. They're also on Facebook and Twitter. Look for USU Interfaith Initiative. Eboo Patel, as I referenced before the break, some people, and this is usually influenced by whether or not you are a person of faith or not, some say the answer to this intolerance and violence is to de-emphasize faith. They say faith and religion itself is the problem.
Sure. I don't think that that's A, practical, which is to say I don't think it's going to happen, and B, I don't think it ought to happen. My religion plays a very important role in my life. It is the ethos that inspires the range of my actions, and there's a lot of other people I know who are like that as well. So I don't think the entire world is going to convert to a single worldview, whether that is Catholic or Pentecostal or secular atheist or Muslim or LDS, frankly. That doesn't mean that we should stop preaching our gospels. Of course we should preach our gospels, especially if in the case of, say, the Catholic or Pentecostal or LDS or Muslim traditions, it's a big part of our faith. And we should recognize that in addition to preaching, we should have a way of relating to other people positively in a cooperative way as well. So an evangelical Christian friend of mine puts this beautifully. He says that within Christianity, the way he understands it, is both the Great Commission, which is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ as he sees it, and the Great Cooperation, which is to cooperate with others on common projects with a focus on appreciation, friendship, relationship, and service, and not a focus on conversion. And my experience with LDS folks across the country and around the world has been that they do this very, very well. They're clear when they're preaching their gospel, and they're clear when they're cooperating in the spirit of friendship and serving the common good. And that's also something I have great admiration for.
I wonder if we could talk a little bit about your faith as it is viewed, especially in America, especially, you know, post 9/11. I think there's still a strain of skepticism about the entire faith. In some people's views, it tends to breed radicals, and the moderates aren't speaking out enough, and there's fear there. I wonder how
right.
You respond to that.
Well, I mean, it's enormously sad for me, especially as a father raising a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old, that I don't turn on the news in the car. I don't turn on the news on the television because I am teaching them what I think is in Islam that lifts up the primary values of mercy, positive relationship, pluralism, ethical living, and so much of what we hear about Islam is the exact opposite of that. It's destruction, it's violence, it's divisiveness. And the fact is that there is a small but extremely active and vocal segment of people who call themselves Muslims, you know, far less than 1% of the entire Muslim population. But when they are armed to the teeth the way that they are, when they're hyper-aggressive the way that they are, and when they are when they have a strategy of videotaping their beheadings, it's not a surprise that a lot of people around the world see that as the definition of Islam. But it's a great, great sadness to me as a Muslim and a Muslim father. You know, interestingly, I think Muslims and Mormons have something in common here, which is that if you look at surveys of religious attitudes in the United States, Muslims and Mormons both come in at the bottom. That large swaths of our fellow Americans have negative views of our religions, and that is very clearly a result of negative media images, which is to say, the people who twist our religion. And who are very good at getting on television, wind up representing the religion to many people. When, in fact, the religion preaches exactly the opposite of that twisted view. But more of us need to be better at representing that, which is one of the reasons I think interfaith cooperation is so important. We know both from human experiences, but also from social science research, that what really changes somebody's impression about a group or a tradition is positive, meaningful interaction with people in that tradition. There's now reams and reams of social science research on this. And so interfaith cooperation is a way of accomplishing that. It's a way for all groups, but I think especially groups in which where other people have negative attitudes, like Muslims and Mormons, it's a way for us to be in direct personal encounter with people from different backgrounds, and for them to get to see us and work with us, and therefore have a better impression of our traditions and our communities.
We just have about 3 or 4 minutes left. I'd like to take you back to high school. I'm wondering, the young Eboo Patel sitting around that lunch table with that very diverse, that United Nations of friends you had. In one way, you're very lucky, I think. What would you have liked to have seen that conversation look like if you'd have known what you know now?
Yeah, Tom, that's a great question. So few people ask me that question. I feel like I should write a new afterword to Acts of Faith in answer to that question. But I guess. You know, as I write in Acts of Faith, religion would come up in kind of side door ways. Somebody would say, I can't play basketball because I have to go to some church thing on Sunday, right? Well, I think the way I would have liked that conversation to go is somebody saying, well, tell me about that church thing. You know, what are you doing? And what does it mean to you? You know, tell me about the role that plays in your heart and in your consciousness. And so I don't think it's a great idea to force a religion conversation, especially on 15-year-olds, but religion has a way of coming up in quotidian ways, and I think that if we engage those ways positively and strategically, it can create a constructive conversation. And I think that one of the things I really wish we had talked about was the way that we were each inspired by our religions to serve others. Because, you know, so much of what everybody was doing was they were participating in church service projects or Hindu temple service projects or LDS service projects. And that's the kind of thing that anybody around the table can relate to and admire, but none of us felt comfortable enough sharing it. And I think that that's a tragedy. And I really hope that lunch tables today, which are just as diverse, if not more diverse, as my lunch table was back in 1990 at Glenbard South High School in Glen Ellyn, Illinois. I hope that young people feel more comfortable having those conversations, and I think it's going to be the Allison Fifes of the world. You know, whether she goes off to become an international businesswoman, she's a Huntsman Scholar at Utah State, or whether she becomes the principal of a school, she's going to be the person creating the environment for young people to feel comfortable sharing positively and appreciatively about their different religious traditions.
Allison Fife is with the USU Interfaith Initiative. That's a new initiative at USU, and you're welcome to join that if you're, students mostly, but you can inquire about that by emailing the group, interfaith@usu.edu. They're also on Facebook and Twitter. Look for USU Interfaith Initiative. There'll be a convocations address featuring Eboo Patel, who's my guest on the program today. He's the founder and president of Interfaith Youth Corps. And that address is on the USU campus at Utah State University on Thursday, September 4th. It's called Building Bridges of Interfaith Cooperation. It's the Kent Concert Hall, 7 p.m. It's free and open to the public. There'll be a book signing of his latest book, Sacred Ground, immediately following. Books are available at the USU bookstore and also for sale at the venue the night of the convocation address. And that convocation is a kicking-off event for the Better Together campaign, which is being organized by the USU Interfaith Initiative. Their next event is a student-led interfaith speed faithing panel. That's held at the Taggart Student Center Auditorium on the USU campus, 7 p.m. on Wednesday, September 17th. As I said, if you're interested in anything with USU Interfaith Initiative, email the group, interfaith@usu.edu. And there are a few spots available at a roundtable, which is being led by Eboo Patel. That's on Friday, September 5th, 8 to 10 a.m., and it's called Catalyzing Interfaith Leadership Best Practices. You can email the group, interfaith@usu.edu, to see if there's still space available. Eboo Patel, thanks so much for being with us today. It's a pleasure.
It was terrific being with you. Thank you. I'm excited to be in Utah next week. I'll be both at Utah Valley University and at Utah State University, and it's been circled on my calendar for many months. It's something I'm very excited about.
Very good. Thank you so much, and we'll look forward to having you in Utah. And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Utah writer Gina Wickwar.
Having just made two airplane round trips in just as many weeks and suffering all the various indignities this entails, I have a few comments to make. This is because the other morning, as I sat reading the paper, I caught a report on television about a real fracas on some national airline. A full-blown brawl, said the TV guy, one the flight attendants had to break up with the help of other passengers. Nothing about terrorism, nothing about being patted down by some snarky TSA person, nothing about x-raying your new knee or having to dump that brand new $5 bottle of water you just bought. No, nothing of the sort. The fisticuffs taking place at 32,000 feet were about, get this, leg room. Both my husband and I perked up at that because, as you know, leg space in an airplane steerage section has always been as rare as hen's teeth. Its lack has long been decried by all the poor souls who are stuffed into coach class and who, unless they are under 5'3", sit with their knees elevated to somewhere near their sternums. So what was this brouhaha about airplane leg space that could possibly be new? Well, it seems there is this novel device, perfectly legal, at least at the moment, called a knee defender. Its two pieces hook on either side of your deployed meal tray and totally prevent the person in front of you from doing what we all do, press the armrest button to lean back in our seats. The knee defender brings an abrupt halt to that maneuver. As a result, the knee defender was the culprit behind that little contretemps in the stratosphere. After thinking about it for about 3 seconds, I decided I'm on the side of the knee defender. I know tons of people like to use their laptops when they fly, and it's impossible to do so when the person in front of you has her seat back down. It's also hard to eat your 1 centimeter square bag of peanuts and drink your 1 ounce Diet Coke while your tray has been pushed into your gut. I, for one, will gladly bear sitting upright for 4 hours because I know how I feel when the person in front of me kicks back and destroys my day. On the other hand, I can sort of see the other side. If you really want to lean back and can't, you might get a tad testy. But start a fight about it? Frankly, I'd rather go to the barricades for an extra 2 bag of pretzels and a full can of Sprite. This is Gina Wickwar.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan. KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.
Temperature is 56 degrees on University Hill. The time now is 10 o'clock.